just a little bit of an introduction. To combat phosphorus problems in waters, best management practices are currently being used, and some of these include buffer strips, cover crops, and conservation tillage. And while these are effective at reducing the particulate P losses, mostly by controlling erosion, they do little for dissolved P. So all you know, the industrial byproducts can absorb large amounts of phosphorus. Some include slag, gypsum, water treatment residuals, acid mine drainage residuals, and fly ash. And when applied directly to soils or manures, they have been shown to reduce the amount of dissolved P. However, that's only changing the form of the phosphorus. It's still remaining in the system. So over time, that can become soluble and released into waters. That's why it's important to think about P removal structures. Simple concept, you have high P water entering the structure filled with these materials. And then it comes out, you have low P water. And then once that material is saturated, you can actually remove it from the system, which takes the P with it. So the long-term goal, we want to produce an empirical model for predicting the P removal capacity and lifetime of landscape filters via the flow-through approach. And taking that flow-through approach, along with some characterization of the materials, like the physical and most importantly, the chemical properties, we'll be able to predict the design curve for any P concentration and flow rate. And a quick example of a design curve, the simple one here, is just get your percent P removed on the y-axis and your cumulative P added at the x-axis. And you can see at that x-intercept, that is the point where that material is saturated and will no longer absorb any phosphorus. So at that point, you remove it from the structure. And so far, I've completed flow-through work on 7 materials and I have 8 remaining. The design curve will be unique for each material, P concentration, and retention time. And when I say retention time, that's just the amount of time that the solution is in contact with the material. So that means the retention time is inversely proportional to the flow rate. And comparing the batch to the flow through, it's more realistic when thinking about field conditions to use the flow through, because you're simply in the field, you're not just putting your solution in a test tube or in whatever and just shaking it. So you have limited retention time or contact time in the field, which has an importance of kinetics because the time and reaction mechanism will all be different for all these materials. And also, you're going to be applying steady applications of low P solutions in the field, so that's more representative of the flow-through approach. And there at the bottom, constant replenishment of the P solution and removal of reaction products. For the flow-throughs, we use 5 simulated ditch water P solutions, concentrations of 0.5, 1, 5, 10, and 15 parts per million. We also include calcium, magnesium, potassium, and sulfur in there to best represent runoff water. And we set the flow rates to achieve the desired retention times. And as you can see, they're 10, 8, 6, 3, and 0.5 minutes. And we want to maintain a constant head, and we did that by using Marriott bottles. Samples taken every 30 minutes for 5 hours, and you can see EC, pH, and inorganic phosphorus were measured. Here's just a simple setup of the flow-throughs. You can see it's done in the lab, so it's done at room temperature. And you have the Marriott bottle applying a constant head to the flow-through cell with the single-channel pumps pumping through the solution into the collection vials. Like I said, we wanted to characterize the materials, and we wanted to have a large range of different characterizations so we could best see what the model would see was most important. So we use p-sorption isotherms to compare to the flow-throughs, water extraction, total digestion, the toxicity characteristic leaching procedure, which we did to make sure that these materials were safe to use in land structures, x-ray diffraction to give us a better clue at maybe the bonding mechanism that was taking place, PC and electrical conductivity, pH buffer capacity, exchangeable aluminum, and ammonium oxalate extraction. The materials we used a flue gas desulfurization gypsum, which comes from the power industry, and the main bonding element there is calcium. Slag was an electric arc furnace slag, once again calcium. The aluminum water treatment residual we got from a plant that used alum as a flocculant, and the bonding element there is aluminum. Calcium water treatment residual, they use calcium hydroxide, so calcium there. Fly ash comes from coal-fired power plants. And once again, that's calcium. The acid mine drainage residual used to treat acid mine drainage, and those contain aluminum, iron, and calcium. And the Excel minerals is a soil amendment used to supply calcium and silica to growing crops. For the T-clip data, I just want to go over this quickly because we just want to show that these are safe to use. As you can see, the arsenic, chromium, and cadmium there, the limits are all well below the T-clip limits, which are set by the EPA. And as you can see, the aluminum water treatment residual and the AMDR do have higher amounts of aluminum. That's just because they are loaded with aluminum. The model, these are the variables that the model found to be most important. And first there you have buffer index, and we buffered the pH down, or buffered it to a pH of 6.5. And you can see Excel Minerals had the highest buffer index. pH was important, total calcium, which was highest, and your calcium water treatment residual. Your total aluminum and oxalate extractable aluminum were highest in your aluminum water treatment residual. Total iron in the acetamide range, and gypsum had the highest amount of water extractable calcium. This is some of the results we got from the model, and this model was significant at the 0.001 P level. As you can see here, we used the 1 part per million P addition at a retention time of 10 minutes. And you have P removed on the y-axis and P added on the x-axis. And for the Excel Minerals, you see that it removed the most amount of P and had the most amount of P added to it. And this was because it was highly buffered, had the highest buffer index as you saw from that slide before. And it was buffered at a high pH, so the calcium that was within it was able to precipitate with that phosphorus. This is just the same graph, but with the Excel Minerals removed, so you can better see the other materials. And the first one is your aluminum water treatment residual. Contained high amounts of total and oxalate extractable aluminum. And this, the neutral pH, which it maintained, is allowed for that mechanism of absorption with the phosphorus to occur. For the calcium water treatment residual, once again, it had that high amount of total calcium and a good buffer index and a pH above 8. Again, that pH is important for that precipitation to occur with that phosphorus. For the gypsum, you can see it barely pops up there in the corner. And although, if you remember, it had the highest amount of water extractable calcium, it had a very low buffer index, which means it wasn't able to keep that pH high enough for that calcium to react with that phosphorus. For the fly ash, relative to the others, it had low amount of total calcium, but again, that high pH, which is important to keep that precipitation reaction occurring. For the slag, once again, had high total calcium, lower water extractable calcium compared to the rest, and again, that high pH. And on this one, you can see that the acetamide drainage removed the most P, and that's because it contained calcium, aluminum, and iron, so it was getting removal by both mechanisms. And because of that neutral pH and that good buffer index, it kept it at that neutral pH to allow both mechanisms to occur. And as you can see, the model, which I showed before, the most important things here are the oxalate extractable aluminum, the total calcium, pH, and the buffer index. And just to compare some of these materials, when comparing the calcium to the slag, the calcium did have more water extractable calcium and a higher buffer index, and that allowed it to absorb a little bit more phosphorus, but slag was more efficient. When I say it's more efficient, you can see at the beginning there, it's a steeper curve, which means for the amount of P added, it removed a lot more phosphorus, and that's most likely due to the higher pH. And then for the fly ash versus the slag, they had similar buffer index and similar pH. And the fly ash actually had more water extractable calcium, but because slag had 2 times more of the total calcium, it was able to absorb a lot more phosphorus. For this bar graph, I'm just taking where that, on that previous slide where it stopped, where that curve stopped, that's just where it's saturated. So I'm just representing this in bar form, so it's the maximum P absorbed at an equilibrium concentration of 1 part per million. And the main thing I just want to show with this is that the batch and the flow through, or that the batch was different than the flow through on mostly all accounts. This is the more important one. This goes to like the lifetime of your structure. So it's the maximum P added to reach that saturation point at that equilibrium concentration of 1 part per million. So you can see that the batch highly underestimates the amount of P you can add to that material before it's saturated, which means you'd be pulling out that material before it was actually saturated, was just a waste and a waste of time of just removing it early. So in conclusion, we found that buffer index was one of the most important key factors to the model. You have to keep that pH elevated so that calcium can precipitate with that phosphorus. And as you saw with the gypsum, it did contain a large amount of calcium, but because it couldn't keep that pH high enough, it did very little at absorbing phosphorus. Oh, my bad. Then for the iron and aluminum dominated materials, you had to keep that pH at neutral levels or below for them to remain active. And then the batch isotherm highly underestimates the amount of P added before the material is spent. So once again, that's has big implications on predicting the lifetime of those structures. You don't want to pull that material out before it's actually spent. With that, I'd just like to thank Dr. Chad Penn for all his assistance with this research and take any questions.
Thanks, Dustin. We have time for a question or two.
Did you use just regular gypsum here, or was it the same flue gas desulfurization product that Ray was talking about?
Yeah, it was the same.
Magnetization and animal lead are on the same page with all differences in batch experiments and flow through or column studies. I'm just interested, if you apply your phosphorus absorbing materials in structures to control target drainage runoff or urban runoff, you will rarely have like a high or low pH because you don't actually have long enough time for this, in materials like the variation calcium, your pH will be high if your retention time is over 12 hours. In drainage ditches, it's just like, much shorter retention time. So, why are you so concerned about buffer solution in pH in your model?
Because you're saying the contact time?
Yes.
You're saying it won't have enough contact time to...
to have elevated pH.
Well, most of the things we're looking at, we did have lower retention times. And because of... Wait, do we have...
Can I finish by a phrase? I was just asking a specific question. In your flow through studies?
Yes.
Five different flow through times from 0 to 10 minutes, like 0, 1, 3, 5 minutes.
Yes.
Did you use it like in sequence or you exchange material each time?
Exchange materials each time.
Good, thank you.
Okay.
We were aiming to use short retention times. Because we envisioned the structures, the shorter the retention time, the more water you can put through it, but at the same time, the treatment may not be as good.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the pilot scale structures that we built, we had retention times of 10 minutes. And then the pH actually was pretty elevated for most of the materials.
In
10 minutes, it was still very elevated.
Because glass has normally very elevated pH.
Yes.
I never had an elevated
pH. That's very interesting.
But it's very interesting, because it's, I think, the first time that we saw it. It's very good.